Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Team Toby Positive Radio Show with your host, Charmaine Hammond. Join us each week as Charmaine and her Team Toby Pack improve lives by teaching kindness, acceptance, and respect. Our mission is to get listeners into the conversation about living a fulfilled, prosperous life through the unique and powerful animal-human bond. Be part of the team and lead the way of change. Find us on the web, Facebook, and YouTube at The Original Team Toby and on Twitter at Team Toby 2. Here's your host, Charmaine Hammond.
Welcome to Positive Radio. It's Charmaine Hammond here with Team Toby. We're on the website, theoriginalteamtoby.com, and on Facebook at the same handle. And yes, our dog Toby also does tweet. Well, I give him a little bit of help with the tweeting, but they're really, I think, from his perspective. And the Twitter handle for us is at Team Toby 2. I'm really excited about the show tonight. We're going to be talking to Deborah Berger, who is the co-founder and executive director and CEO of Canine Assisted Therapy Incorporated, which stands for CAT. That's the acronym. Now, they're located in Oakland Park, Florida, and provide an amazing array of services. CAT provides a network of qualified, dependable, caring therapy teams committed to delivering a therapeutic benefit through the use of dogs. And this is extended to both children and adults who are in need of comfort, companionship, or that unconditional love that we know only a dog can provide. CAT provides support, training, education, and mentoring to those interested in dog therapy programs, and also builds connections between volunteers, facilities, and individuals seeking dog therapy. You can find them on the web at catdogs.org. They're also on Facebook and social media. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'm delighted to talk with you because we're big fans of canine and animal-assisted therapy. Our first experience with that was with our dog, Toby. And he volunteered for 4 years at a mental health facility with adults. And I still kind of smile and scratch my head when I look back on those fond days because my mind, first of all, goes to the days where Toby, our Chesapeake Bay Retriever, was destroying our house, costing us thousands of dollars in damage. And then the behaviorist comes in and says, your dog needs a job. He needs a purpose. And we watched not only patients transform, but this dog transformed through the experience. So tell us a little bit, as the listeners, a little bit about what animal-assisted therapy, canine-assisted therapy, really is.
Well, we'd like to call them all animal-assisted interactions, and it's really honing in on the human-animal bond. There's a very special bond that happens when we come into contact with animals, whether it be a dog, a horse, a cat, a bird. That we really don't understand. There's chemical changes that take place in our bodies, and not only for us but for the animal. It's just as beneficial for the animal as it is for us. And animal-assisted therapy really focuses on that magic and uses it to help individuals that, you know, are in need of healing or comfort.
Yes. I love that you use the word magic because I remember the first day I took Toby into the hospital, and I'll be really honest with you, Deborah, and listeners, I was nervous. I just didn't know what to expect, and I remember the trainer saying, just let Toby be Toby. Let him do his job. He knows what he needs to do. And I'm thinking, well, how can he know? He just destroyed our house 2 days ago. And when I opened the door to the hospital, he kind of walked in, Deborah, barked 2 times as if he's saying, I'm here. And he just knew what to do, knew what to provide, and you described it as magic. And that's what I experienced as an observer. It was beautiful.
It is. It's amazing.
What are some of the benefits that you see from these incredible dogs going in to provide comfort, companionship, and unconditional love?
There are so many benefits. One of the things that we work with so many different populations, and each population is unique and different, and every patient that you work with is unique and different. We are working with veterans right now in the mental health.
Oh.
Where we've got dogs that go in and to the group classes in anger management, or with veterans who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And just having the dogs there to pet and to cry with is very comforting to these individuals and helps them to start the healing process. We have dogs that work in the with children on the autism spectrum, and the magic that these dogs do with these children is beyond words. They connect with these kids. They have no expectation of these children, and I think the children pick up on that and connect themselves with these animals, and we've seen miracles happen with these animals. And the elderly who've been left, you know, so many of them are just left in nursing homes with no visitors, to watch them light up and start telling stories of animals that they used to have and interactions that they used to have. So there's so many ways that these animals bring joy to people, you know, whether it be through physical therapy, encouraging someone to walk a little further or pick up a ball and throw it, or work on their fine and gross motor skills by holding a brush and brushing the dog. There's physical, there's emotional, there's mental changes that happen when we interact with these animals. And therapy dogs are born.
I agree.
They're not made. They are meant to do this. And there are animals that, you know, are just for our pets, and they really don't want to interact. But those dogs that really want to interact in this capacity really have a lot to give back.
Yes. I agree with you, too, on that comment, Deborah, about that some animals are just born to do this. This is their purpose. Other animals, you know, we've had pets growing up. I remember my very first dog, Duchess, who we got, I think, when she was probably about 7 or 8. And, you know, I think her purpose, it wasn't to be a therapy dog. It was just to watch over us kids, because I remember her, she always used to kind of, if we went out on the driveway, she would be down at the driveway towards the road so that we didn't go down there. And I think her purpose was just to love us in this beautiful, unconditional way and really, you know, just be this great friend. And then, of course, Toby comes along, and his job, I think, was to really extend that love to other people. And when you talked about no expectations, isn't that incredible that animals can just accept us for who we are, you know, no matter what mood we're in that moment? And you're right, there's no judgment, no expectation.
And I think that's what their magic is.
I can imagine how just showing up, for example, the work that your teams are doing with the veterans, and you know, what a beautiful support for them just to have this dog in their sessions and their counseling programs. No judgment, no expectation. And I would suspect it probably helps them open up sooner or feel supported in a different way that they might get from a human. Is that a fair kind of assessment?
Absolutely, absolutely. We've had responses from not only the counselors. We had one counselor tell us, "I don't know how I was doing these anger management classes without dogs in them." And we've had the veterans actually tell us that, you know, it was just so comforting, and being able to focus on the dog while I told my story, while I expressed my fears and my anger, helped me to release it.
Wow. You know, I just got goosebumps when you were talking about that. And on one of the shows a while back, we had Stephen Latham, who was the producer of the Shelter Me series, a PBS series. And they did a vignette of a couple of veterans who had come back, and both of them had been placed with therapy dogs. Both of these therapy dogs were shelter dogs as well. And it was incredible listening to their story, their experience of that. Well, I remember one gentleman was talking about loud noises when he came home, really gave him nightmares, really upset him emotionally. And this dog, just the dog's presence, the dog didn't even do anything other than simply be there. It kind of helped him sensitize, or desensitize, I guess, to the noises that were frightening him, and just sort of adapt back into community with less stress.
Yeah, and we hear that kind of story all the time. It's just amazing what these animals do. And since you brought up rescues, it just so happens that 85%, we have about 140 dogs in our program.
Wow.
Our volunteer teams right now in our program. And 85% of those dogs, and we need to do another survey of our therapy teams, because I think it's gone up. But the last time that we did a survey, we had 85% of the dogs in our program were rescued. So it says
wow.
a lot about the animals, and it says a lot about the volunteers who are working with these animals.
Wow.
We firmly believe that these animals understand that they've been rescued, that they have been saved, and they want to give back to the community.
Wow, I'm my body is just going all goosebumpy here when you said that. That just really resonates. That I've never heard that said that way, Deborah, and I actually have never heard groups kind of track that statistic. I think that's just an incredibly powerful statistic. 85% of the dogs in your program
mm-hmm.
were rescue dogs, and here they are, you know, helping rescue people from their own challenges, so to speak.
Yep.
And our Toby was a rescue as well. And I just, you know, I think
they understand.
I think they do, Deborah. Beautifully said. And with the kids that they're working in, you talked a little bit about the dogs that are working with children who have autism. Tell us a little bit more about that.
That's just amazing. We're currently working right now with several public schools to develop a curriculum to integrate these dogs actually into the classroom. Some of the miracles that we've seen, as I mentioned before, these dogs go and they interact with these children with absolutely no expectations. When we interact with these children as humans, we want them to communicate. We have an expectation. We want to open the lines of communication, and I think it puts a stress on these children that makes their autism even more prevalent. When
right.
an animal comes into the picture, they're just there, and the children are able to connect. And we had a story just recently. We have a wonderful therapy team, and the dog's name, her name is Macy. And Macy is a career changed, she was a hearing service dog. And she's
oh,
now doing
okay.
therapy work because she needs to continue to work.
Mm-hmm.
But Macy laid down. We went to a school, just a tour of the school. We weren't expecting to really interact with the children at this point. But they decided to take us into the preschool. And these are our children of all levels on the autism spectrum, from very low functioning to almost Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
But we sat down with these children, and they were 3-4 years old, and we sat down with about 4 children. And one of the children was sitting on the teacher's lap. We were on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the little boy was on the lower functioning end of autism. He had made no eye contact, no speech, was definitely in his own little world. And the teacher took his hand and started petting Macy and saying, "Dog." And I was busy, you know, helping keep the other children, you know, from overwhelming overwhelming Macy. And all of a sudden, the teacher starts screaming, "Oh, my God, oh, my God, he made eye contact."
Oh.
Well, he did it 4 times. And
wow.
before it was all over with, within 2 minutes, he made eye contact with the teacher, he made eye contact with Macy, he made eye contact with the principal, who was also there observing. Before it was all over and said and done, the little boy said, "Dog," which was the first
oh.
word that he had ever spoken. So we were all in tears. The principal was in tears. The teacher, I was
in
tears.
I'm in tears listening.
We were all in
oh.
tears. And
wow.
it was just simply this interaction. It was just this magic that happens that none of us can explain. But
in
it takes very
minutes.
Special dogs to work with children that are on the autism spectrum. So, you know, we do a lot of testing and a lot of training before we put dogs in that situation, because
right.
we want to make sure that they're safe and that the children that they're interacting with are safe as well. But the next time we went to visit this little boy, he remembered Macy
oh.
and went right to her, which was something that he had never done before either.
Wow.
So the experiences can be truly life-changing, not only for the person, the child, the adult, who's receiving the therapy from the dog, but for the volunteers themselves. It's so motivating and humbling and moving to see what these dogs do.
Oh, and just what an experience, a memorable experience for everyone. I mean, I'm just in tears listening to this, Deborah, because it's such a beautiful story, and I think such a great testament of what animals do in the world to make a difference. And when I really clued into this, actually, the power of animal-assisted therapy, we were doing a presentation, my dog Toby and I, an organization that we love. We visited, and I, as a trainer and speaker, had done a lot of work for them corporately. And there was a little boy in the audience who I think was about 4, and he was adopted into a family, and came from a war-torn country. So he came from a very violent background, and his mom and dad, the adopted family, were saying that he doesn't speak and that any noises would set him off. And our dog, Toby, had a bark that could be heard from one state to the other. And I'm thinking, oh, Toby, please don't bark.
Please don't.
And it was so interesting. As all the kids filed into the room, Toby's eye met this little boy's eye. And I'm always intrigued by that, how dogs pick people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just watched, and the little boy was very hesitant to come to Toby. And as I'm sharing Toby's story and telling them some of the funny things that Toby had done, the children were sort of scooching on their butts closer to be with the dog. By the end of the story, he's got seven kids sort of laying around them. One of them was this little boy. And he just kept staring at this little boy, not barking, just staring at him. And at the end, the kids all clapped, and Toby barked, and I thought, oh, no. And the child, you know, sort of jumped about 2 feet in the air, didn't make an emotional reaction. But then later, he came up to me and to Toby. He kind of hugged me around my knees and hugged Toby and ran off to his family, and the mother started crying. And she said that's the first time he had hugged someone since they had adopted him. So, of course, we all were just so emotional. But I thought, wow, this dog, you know, was able to connect with this little guy in a way that, you know, how do you explain that? You just experience it.
That's right. That's right. There is no explanation.
Yeah, and we didn't train Toby to do that. I mean, that must be the exciting part for you, Deborah, and all the volunteers, is just that there's a lot of training that goes on to help dogs be ready.
Right.
But there are some things that you just can't train them on. Like, for example, the beautiful story you shared about this little boy. Wow.
Yeah, and that's something that's very important, too. You know, as we said, that we firmly believe that therapy dogs are born. They can be made. Any dog can be a therapy dog. But if they're not truly enjoying the experience, if it's not something that they really, truly were born to do, they don't get as much out of it. And neither do the people that are on the receiving end of the therapy. And that's
right.
Where the magic is when the dogs really want to do this, when the dog really enjoys what they're doing. And it's so critical to make sure that if you're involved in pet therapy, that you get aligned with an organization that helps you target where you and your dog are most talented and where your dog, what populations your dog enjoys being with. Some dogs love being with the elderly. Some love being with children. A lot of dogs don't like being with children. They tolerate it, but it's not something that they truly enjoy. And we as handlers have to take that into consideration when we're doing pet therapy and make sure that the animals truly are enjoying the interaction so that they can truly work the magic that they do.
Beautiful. And we also see therapy dogs in reading programs as well.
Yes. Yes, and
tell
we do
us a
have a reading program.
How they help with that?
We specifically target. We work with the schools. We work with teachers and reading coaches, and we target children who are behind on their reading skills. Maybe are learning English as a second language, or maybe just have a very low self-esteem. And the dogs, again, they're non-judgmental. They have no expectations, and the children sit and they read to the dogs. And, you know, just then that's where some of the training comes in. We'll teach the dogs to put their paw on the book or to really engage and look at the child and look at the book if the book is presented to them to make this child really feel like they're improving their reading skills. The dog is really listening to me. And sometimes that's all it takes to break through to these children and help them, you know, learn comprehension and learn oral fluency. And we've had just amazing breakthroughs with these children. Just reading to the dogs. It's so simple, but so effective.
Wow. Wow. Now, Deborah, if people wanted to get involved in animal-assisted therapy programs just like yours but don't live in Florida, how could they find out where to start, where to find an organization in their community?
It's best, you know, Google is always great. There are two very large organizations. It used to be called Delta Society, is now Pet Partners, and also Therapy Dogs International. They do have evaluators throughout the country and actually I think some of them have them throughout the world that you can contact and have your dog evaluated. And then I encourage them to just, you know, look for a group. There's really no database, effective database or anything that you can look for, but look for a group that will, you know, help you and provide a cohesiveness in the services that you provide and help you determine where your dog best fits and where you as a handler best fit into pet therapy. Support is critical. And there are not a lot of therapy organizations out there that do more than just evaluate the dogs and certify them and insure them. So that's where, you know, canine assisted therapy is unique, that, you know, we embrace every one of our volunteers. We tour every facility before we ever place a volunteer team in there to make sure that it's not only suitable for the facility, but it's suitable for the therapy team that we're placing in there to make sure that these interactions are as beneficial as they can possibly be.
Wonderful. Yes, so, so important. We are talking to Deborah Berger, who is with Canine Assisted Therapy. The acronym is CAT, C-A-T. Their website is catdogs.org. Now, Deborah, if folks are in Florida, how can they stay connected with you? How can they, and what kind of support does your organization need?
We survive solely on individual donations and grants. So, you know, any support anyone can give us is very, very much appreciated. You can get a hold of us through our website at www.catdogs, that's singular cat, plural dogs, .org. We're also on Facebook at Canine Assisted Therapy, and our Twitter handle is at Canine Assisted.
Wonderful. Well, Deborah, this has just been a beautiful, beautiful interview. I just want to thank you and all your volunteers, the four-legged ones and the two-legged ones, for everything that they're doing to make the world a better place. And I love what Canine Assisted Therapy, Inc. is doing, and it is making a difference.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being on the show. This was with Deborah Berger, co-founder, executive director, and CEO of a wonderful, wonderful group, Canine Assisted Therapy, Inc. They are in Oakland Park, Florida. Make sure you check them out, catdogs.org. They're on Facebook and Twitter. Stay in touch. Maybe your dog would be perfect to be a therapy dog. Find out more at catdogs.org. Thanks for being on the show, Deborah.
Thank you for having me.
I love talking about purpose and passion, and that was one of the conversations that came up with Deborah today on the show. And I always think about how can we translate these lessons that we learn from pets, from animals, into our human world, into our workplace, into our family, into our community. And today I actually had the opportunity to speak at the university that I attended more than 20 years ago, and I'm starting to show my age. It was really exciting to step foot on campus again and to talk to students and to the faculty that were involved in my program. And one of the conversations that came up was that of being on purpose and passion in your life. And it's so important for workplaces to find ways, just like Deborah talked about, how the animals connect people and how they connect people to learning. It's so important for us in our workplaces to find ways to engage employees and engage people to learning. And one of the big discoveries I had, and this came from Toby, my greatest teacher, was I watched how he woke up every day. His dog woke up with what we called the happy dance. He did this crazy dance in the house, and he kind of welcomed every day with just a sense of freshness that today is a new day. And I remember thinking to myself one morning, I looked out the window, and it was raining or snowing, and so the weather was dismal, and I thought, oh, you know, I've got to travel in this weather. And then I look over to my right, and here's this incredible dog just welcoming yet another new day. And I thought, isn't this a great way to be if we can just embrace the day as a new opportunity? And I took that learning from Toby around starting my day with a sense of purpose, a sense of gratitude, and a sense of action. Because anyone listening who has dogs often finds that the first thing that happens in the dog's waking moment is they bring you a ball or a Kong or a toy, because they're raring to go, they're ready to play, they're ready to play fetch. And so I kind of made it my mission to start my day a little bit more purposeful And some of the corporate clients I work with when I'm training or speaking, I'm noticing that they're doing that as well. They're starting their workday with a sense of purpose, with a stronger connection to their workplace vision or to the overall company goals. And it really does make a difference. Just like Deborah talked about how these volunteer dogs are making a big, profound difference in the lives of humans and that they are living their purpose, we can have that same effect on people in our life. So I'd love to leave you with that thought around how can you start your day every day with a little bit more purpose? How can you show up in the world as your best version of you? I look forward to continuing the conversation. And of course, our Facebook page is The Original Team Toby. I hope you'll pop on over there and stay in conversation with us. Share your stories. Share how your pets are teaching you and how we can apply these lessons into our human world, into our workplace, our organizations, families, and community. And, of course, on Twitter, our handle is Team Toby. That's T-E-A-M-T-O-B-Y and the number 2. And we are on Pinterest. And, of course, the website is theoriginalteamtoby.com. I want to thank you all for listening and sharing the radio show podcast with people that you know will have an interest in these. Until next week, I look forward to having you back. And let's be kind to one another. Take care.